premier radio networks, presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Indeed, and welcome back to another hour of Coast to Coast AM with our guest tonight, Paul Gersio. Dr. George Hart will stick around this hour as well as we talk about the Merlin Project. Next hour, Paul will be with us. We'll open up the phone lines right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Paul, I would assume if Merlin were to run charts on all those poor people who died in that tsunami, some 300,000 people close to it, that you would see spikes during this time of year for them. Is that a pretty good guess?
Well, you'd see, let's put it this way, you'd see something significant in the trend line that is an obvious transition spot. So, for instance, you might see a spike. You might also see the very end of a trend line, a little bit like the John Paul run now. If you take a look at the election run, you see that in 05 it just sort of trickles off. You might also see a trend line where it rockets up from nothing to something, indicating that there's a change of a significant sort in the works, which indicates to me, and this is one of the crooks of the way we look at Merlin, that change is change and not endings. So that death is not an ending, it's a change. You're changing from one, so it's a little bit like these new commercials that they're running with, that ESPN, I guess, is running with. People do things like have a clay pot fall off the bookcase and the guy dies and then he goes up through the ceiling and up through the clouds and ends up in another reality watching some other ESPN show. Who's to say that isn't exactly the way it does work?
Who's to say? Only Merlin knows for sure.
But if you ran all of those tsunami victims, you would see a transition spot of significance on the trend line of virtually every one of them, certainly 7 or 8 out of every 10.
That's what you could
identify and say, well, this is somebody likely to be in a circumstance in this year where their life is going to change dramatically. You wouldn't have known they were going to die. They could just as easily have won a lottery.
Absolutely. You're right.
And that's the key item here, though, George, because if it could be either, it could then be both. And the ability to manifest one as opposed to manifesting the other might be a simple matter in the case of some of these tsunami victims, let's say, of having the same kind of sensitivity that some of their animals had who knew to go to the mountains.
George, it might be really useful here for Paul to just briefly describe a test that was presented to him by a group of skeptics where exactly what you're talking about was something that Merlin nailed.
Okay.
Well, yeah. Back in the earlier days of the sort of pre-internet when we were all doing sort of bulletin boards and all of that stuff and online services like Prodigy and so on, there once upon a time was something that General Electric had out there called Genie. Some of your listeners are certainly going to remember Genie. Anyway, on Genie back in 1992, I think it was, a number of engineers who worked for GE, who thought this was just complete and utter nonsense, they had seen us on Larry King, and they basically put this all down. They actually even demeaned George's talent that he couldn't be a serious scientist, because what serious scientist would ever be doing something like this? Anyway, they gave us what I thought was a rather interesting test. They gave us 20 people who died tragically within a 28-year span of time. I think it was from 1960 to 1988. All 20 of these people had died in that 28 years somewhere or other. And we were given their birthdays and no other information. And the protocols of this were set up in such a way that for each of those 20 victims, we would be allowed 10 picks of times. And what we did was, in the 28 years that they died, that would be 56 six-month windows. So there'd be 56 six-month periods within those 28 years. We were allowed 10 picks for each birthday in that 28-year span of time. Now, chance odds would have been one or two, that we would have gotten one or two right. Merlin found 10 out of, or 15 out of 20, whatever the statistic was, it was the chance odds of our succeeding was one in 30,000, and Merlin outperformed chance odds by that percentage. And these skeptics just, they spent months debating afterwards how we could have cheated.
They wouldn't believe it, would they?
No.
Did they ever?
Well, eventually they had to admit that because they designed the test. It was their test. You know, we just went along with it. And foolishly, I think, the next time I would do a test like that, I would be a little bit more involved with the protocols. But they were so convinced that there wasn't a chance in hell that we could come up with more than maybe two of these out of the list, that they smugly sat back. They were even making bets on this whole thing, and we outperformed chance odds by 30,000 to one.
You would think that someone in government, after looking at Merlin and hearing about Merlin, would say, run some things for us.
Well, they did.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. Yeah. Back in 95, we were approached by a unit of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. You want to tell the story, George?
It was an interesting sort of advanced warfighters effort, and I think they heard about us either Larry King or USA Today, and rather subtly got in touch with us and asked us to put together a white paper, no explanation of exactly what they were going to do with it or why they wanted it, but we looked at different geopolitical situations around the world, about 20 of them, including things like Saddam Hussein, and I think they were rather impressed with what they had. But as you know, George, the government has a really hard time admitting that any of this stuff really exists.
True.
We can say that there are a fair number of politicians and major media figures who use this on a regular basis.
Now, when the Joint Chiefs of Staff came to you, did you give them that white paper?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
In fact, the unclassified version of it is posted on the website. You can go look at it.
Now, what do you mean, the unclassified
version? Well, there's stuff that was included in the stuff that was given them that's not out on the website.
But you know about it.
Well, yeah.
You can't tell us.
Well, at the time, there was material out there that was fairly sensitive stuff, and a website is a website, so you're...
I mean, did they ask you some specific things they would like you to look at?
Well, actually, they gave us the option of the form in which we wanted to put this in, and we decided to use terrorism as the sort of overarching, topic area, and among other things, for instance, that we chose to use in this thing was as a time model for domestic terrorism, was the bombing of the World Trade Center in February of 1993. We used that as a genesis moment for domestic terrorism in general, and lo and behold, it found the episodes in 2001. In fact, what we saw was a whole series of possibilities from about, I think it was 98 to about 2001, where it then dropped off, and then it picks up again, I think right about where we are now, isn't it, George, of 06?
Well, was 9-2001 a huge spike with Merlin?
Actually, the spike showed up in... I think it was February or March of 2002, so it was off by about
close.
4 or 5 months.
But was it a big spike?
Oh yeah, it was the big spike at that point in the trend line.
So I don't want to put you on the spot here, Paul, but could one assume that our Joint Chiefs of Staff, the people at the Pentagon, if they had looked at Merlin correctly, could have predicted that something major was going to happen?
Yes,
around that period,
you could you could effectively say that had they wanted to use this seriously and actually pay attention to what was there, this would have given them advance warning of that episode
in advance. How do we know they didn't do that?
We don't know.
Exactly.
The ideal blend here would be a tool like Merlin, along with the information and intelligence gathering that you get at sites like Stratfor.com. That would be a marriage made in heaven.
Because, I mean, if you're saying that they approached you, they got this data, and it was handed over to them, if they didn't look at it and react to it, then something was wrong with them.
Well, I'll tell you one of the things that was peculiar about this, and I can remember being somewhat amused at the time, because when this inquiry first came in, I took the phone call, and the guy who was calling was a lieutenant colonel from a unit of the Joint Chiefs called the Joint War Fighting Center in at Fort Monroe in Virginia. And initially, I thought it was just a guy who had seen us on Larry King or something, wanted some information.
Yeah.
So I turned him over to George, because the two of them sort of were able to speak Pentagonese, and I really don't speak that language. So George and he got together and had a jolly old conversation for a good hour or so, I think. And the guy said to him that he had been requested to look us up and get this information so that he could make a presentation to what he referred to as his flag officers. Well, I remember George did a little checking to find out who flag officers were, and it turned out flag officers were two-star generals and above. So he wasn't talking to the lunch crowd at the water cooler.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, I was assigned for 2 weeks at the Pentagon, where my uncle worked with the Joint Chiefs. He was a colonel. Same name, by the way. Strange. Mm-hmm. And he would take me around and introduce me to some of these people. And let me tell you, there are some high-ranking officers in that place. And if they asked for this report, I got to be convinced in my own mind that they knew that something strange was going to happen. And again, like you say, Merlin can't tell you what it is other than it's going to be something. I mean, it could have been... you know, the stock market could have gone 10,000 points higher.
No, not using time models like the World Trade Center bombing.
Well,
no,
but how does it know? Hold on. How does Merlin know that the timeline is a tragedy as opposed to a great event? See?
Well, it doesn't. But the time model that we were using was a terrorist hit, and so the only thing that would find is other terrorist hits.
How could it do that?
Well, because that's what makes Merlin so interesting. If you get a series of dates, and they're absolutely correct dates, so in other words, you didn't suspect that it was maybe at the end of August of it, but it was the exact date and time that something occurred. That then begins to start a kind of clock, and other incidences that are direct extensions of that, like brother-sister events that are connected in a kind of a network fashion, will show up along the timeline if you've got the right starting moment to begin the timeline. So that the timeline will then find those other points where those other events will be situated in time. It's a little bit like... having a system like the global positioning satellite that can tell you exactly where somebody is ahead of time. It would be like having that kind of information except in advance. And Merlin will find those other iterations of the original events, because almost as a kind of echo, the other events will echo the original event at the right points in the future, so that if they were looking at this trend line, it was designed to find other echoes of the World Trade Center bombing.
Okay.
What was interesting is that we had no way of knowing that they'd come back and finish the job.
Well, that's true. Even though the signs were all there. See, here's my point. The people who ordered this white paper, who wanted to look at this white paper, they either had a tremendous lapse of intelligence security, or they decided to look the other way with this report, which could have corroborated the other things they were hearing. It was just another piece of a puzzle that I can't understand why they didn't look at this.
Well, I'll tell you what George told me, and then I'll let you get George to extrapolate on this, because this struck me as being extraordinarily interesting and stupid.
I mean, you've now broken
a major story. Let me get this out, because this is important. He said to me, don't expect anything much to come of this. That is, after we turned the report in. I said, why is that? He said, because it's the nature of the Pentagon, it's the nature of the way the government operates, that these people in these positions get cycled in and out of these jobs about every 18 months. And he said, one of the problems with contractors who are dealing with the Pentagon is that 75% of our time is spent briefing the new people on what the old people already knew. I said, what? He said, that's the way it works. I said, that sounds pretty ridiculous. He said, that's the way it works. Am I right, George?
Yeah, and if anybody ever goes into the history of Star Wars and the problems it's had, it's really a problem of process, exactly what Paul just described, not technology. The technology is far simpler than a good DVD player or GPS. It's this insane lack of continuity in intelligence there.
It was either gross incompetence, though, there, or they looked the other way.
But it's not the only example. You had, what, the Arizona and Minneapolis FBI offices saying there's something funny going on here?
Well, that's what I mean. All this information, including what you provided, should have woken somebody up.
If they wanted to look. You have to, you know, one of the things that we assume, and I think part of what the 9/11 Commission elucidated, although only barely, is how little the left hand is knowing what the right hand is doing and how agencies are talking to each other. It's such a turf war, and I'm sure, even with all the posturing, George will probably tell you that the turf wars haven't gone away, okay, and probably will never go away. I mean, today, for instance, the budget came out, and the feeding frenzy is on. I mean, everything is fueled by where the money's going.
Well, and I got to tell you, George should be working for the FBI right now, because they've just wasted $170 million of our dollars on a computer software program that doesn't even work.
If you want to understand Washington, George, put together two movies, The Wizard of Oz and Planet of the Apes.
Listen, George, I have a suggestion for you.
Yes, sir.
And that is, and George may shoot me after we get off this
call.
But my George will shoot me, is that if you want to have a show some night to get a little insight into what goes on without giving away national secrets, Dr. Hart is the man to talk to, because first of all, he's seen it all, he's been there for a very long time, he knows how the game is played, and his level of frustration with it is beyond belief. And it's no wonder to me that our report never got anywhere in terms of getting into the hands of people who could have used it, because the chances of it ever, the section of the Pentagon that actually ordered up the report is not the one who would have necessarily been using it, because the section that ordered it up is the one that has to decide where to pre-position supplies and armaments and all the rest of it, not the intelligence department. They didn't order it up, and you can bet they never got a copy of it.
So this report may very well be sitting in somebody's desk. He might have pulled it out on 9/11, glanced at it, and went, oh, my God.
Something like that.
Shoved it back in there.
Actually, I think we made 40 or 50 copies for them, so there's probably 40 or 50 copies sitting in desks.
Does Merlin look at the end of time?
No, not really, because it's looking at time, and time doesn't end as far as the cycles that produce it. So, for instance, if we thought of time as being this huge, grand planetary orchestra that's going on out there, we're just temporary visitors, probably, and the orchestra is going to be, you know, playing on without us.
There are some who are preaching a doomsday scenario. Let's talk about that, Paul, and you, George Hart, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.
To access the audio archives of Coast to Coast AM, log on to coasttocoastam.com. With George Norrie.
We've got a great week of programs in store for you on Coast to Coast. Tomorrow, one of my faves, Lionel Fanthorpe, live from England. He's the one who talks like this, George. He's going to be talking about the Knights Templar and also a story behind the Da Vinci Code. On Wednesday, Dr. Bruce Lipton joins us as we talk about the recent advances in cellular science. No, not the phones. And he'll be talking about how important it is to evolution. Jay-Z Knight will be with us as we talk with Jay-Z about the connection of her story with a 35,000-year-old warrior that she claims is from the lost continent of Atlantis. And apparently, new scientific tests confirm her story. That'll be on Thursday, and then Friday, of course, our very special and favorite open lines. How would you like to get a free electronic book? Well, you can when you become a member of the Filament Book Club. Call 1-888-95-EBOOK. 1-888-95-EBOOK, or go to the coasttocoastam.com website. Right at the bottom, you'll see their link, Filament, F-I-L-A-M-E-N-T, filamentbookclub.com. And welcome back to Coast, Paul Gercio, Dr. George Hart. Paul, if everybody of the same birth date were to be run by Merlin, would they have similar spikes in their lives, in their years?
If there was the same hour, George, yes. Merlin is basically broken down into increments of roughly every 2 hours. And so everybody born essentially in a two-hour range on the same day would have a time track that's virtually identical. There'd be some variance, but not much. And they would have the same transition spots. And what we would find if we actually kept track of them over the years is that the big events in their lives all happened at the same times in the same years. About 75-80% of them, had the major transitions happen, the losses of parents, the arrival of children, the marriages, the divorces, the big career changes, all would have occurred right around the same times. And that's essentially the basis of this. That is what makes this work. That fact is, and that's not something that Merlin has anything to do with. That's a fact. That's a fact of time. Time works that way. We've just simply found a way to display it and capture it and hand it to you so that you can actually look at it and know how far ahead to look to see some of that stuff happening. and maybe how to make some plans around it. One of the things I wanted to do, because we with your indulgence, is we did an hour and a half and we never gave out any contact information. So if you don't mind, I'd like to very quickly just mention a few things, because on our website this time, specifically for your listeners, we've placed a 25-page report called How the Future Happens. It is essentially 30 years of my research distilled down into 25 pages. It's not propaganda. We're not selling anything in there. It's simply information. And what I've found over the years from people who use this, and some of this is not mine. I learned some of this from a teacher many years ago who unfortunately passed on before he ever wrote a word about it. And the only people who know it were the people who actually experienced it and were had it explained to them from him.
From him, yeah.
It's a remarkable piece of information, and it's the basis of it's the thing that started me looking at all of this as an organized phenomenon. If it wasn't for that, I would never have noticed any of these things. And, of course, if it wasn't for the help of George, there would have been no way to do this on the scale that we're now doing it. But it was information I learned from a fellow named Lionel Day back in the late 60s that first turned me on to the orderliness of these things and the fact that time essentially operates in seasonal ways. And if you understand that in the same way the four seasons happen in nature, there are seasons just like that that happen for each of us on an annual basis that has an effect on our health, our well-being, our vitality, our ability to make choices and changes, and the ability to make the future turn out to be some of the things that we'd like it to be. What I have found over the years of using this myself and turning other people onto it is that they have fewer screw-ups in their life, in relationships, in job changes, and so on. They are healthier. They get sick less often. They have fewer accidents because they're more careful at the times when those are going to happen. And frankly, I think they're probably extended the length of their life just by knowing some of the principles that are in this report. So, and it's out there for your listeners to download. We ask nothing of them except that they try it out and maybe pass it on to some friends, let them try it out. They will find it absolutely fascinating.
Then there's some techniques in this?
It's full of techniques.
All right.
It's 25 pages of things like what makes lucky people lucky and what you can do to get luckier than you've been. And this isn't some airy-fairy sort of thing. This is nailed-down stuff that I've actually gone out and researched and found out. This is what, for instance, one of the things that makes lucky people lucky is they make changes in their life when there's no reason to.
True.
Okay. And when there's no stress going on, when they don't have their back to the wall, that's when they change jobs. That's when they get involved in a new relationship. Not when everything is going badly. And because of that, they carry that energy right on into the new thing that was going on successfully in the last thing. Anyway, it's just chock full of information like that. I guarantee that if you actually read it, make some notes on it, try some of the stuff, you're going to write me a note and say, this is unbelievable, this really works. If anyone is interested in actually getting in touch with us for consultation work, the website address is accessbest.com/Merlin. Accessbest is one word, accessbest.com/Merlin. We'll take you right there. We have a toll-free number. It's 866-298-7688. That's 866-298-7688. It's a 24-hour toll-free number, and we promise to get back to you.
Okay, and how backed up are you with people?
Well, I'm pretty backed up. I'll tell you what we did. Starting right after the show last August. We arranged to do the Coast to Coast listeners in the order in which they sent payments into PayPal, basically online, and I have been going through that list ever since. So we're near to the end of the first tier of those responses. There, as a matter of fact, the people who got in touch with us from about October on by say email and telephone, those people in many cases still have to be gotten back to. So I mean, no money's changed hands there, but they did indicate they wanted to do an appointment, and we will eventually get back to them as long as they're patient and they recognize.
Well, you did get blasted, didn't you?
Excuse me?
You did get blasted, didn't you?
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about it. We got completely blasted, which is fine. It's just a matter of now that we know that happens when we get on your show, we're going to have to make plans around that. So we will, but. It certainly caught us by surprise the first time. I'll tell you, after having been regulars with Larry King for a number of years, in the heyday of CNN when there was no other competition,
right.
We never imagined that we would get the kind of response from a radio show that we got from Coast to Coast.
I have never, ever,
and I've been doing radio both as a guest and earlier as somebody on your side of the microphone for now... about almost 40 years.
Since Mark Coney taught you the radio.
Well, no, but I started doing radio in 65 and 6, so, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, since Mark Coney taught you how to talk
almost,
to me.
Yes, I'm almost Mark Coney, okay. Actually, Alan Combs and I, we started out at the same radio station in different years, so we crossed paths in Boston finally, but we had actually started in the same places. But I know what that's like, and I am in awe of your audience.
Well, they're good people too, Paul. Good, intelligent people, as sharp as they come. Let me ask you about doomsday scenarios, primarily because a lot of people are concerned about the future, and I want to talk about the economy and some other things as well. Next hour, Paul, you'll be with me. We'll take phone calls. But because government is so important to our own lives and the direction that we end up going, how do things look in the next several years? George, Paul, what have we looked at with Merlin?
George is actually much more up to speed on this even than I am.
Let's take advantage of you, George, while we have you for the rest of this hour then. What's going on in the next several years with government for all of us?
Disturbingly, going back to the 2000 election, running George Bush's birthday, the inauguration date for the first term, his whole presidency looked like the presidency that wasn't. The only person in his administration that looked like he belonged there in Merlin terms was Dick Cheney. No big surprise there in terms of how things have worked out. What's of concern to us now, and is rather peculiar, is that if you look at the election date for the 2004 election or the inauguration date or, again, George Bush's birthday or other key people in his administration like Donald Rumsfeld, this looks like an administration which halfway through this year going into next year has the wheels come off and perhaps disintegrates. What that's about, one can only surmise. Perhaps something involving this last election, because the whole issue of voting in Ohio has not been sorted out. It could be something else altogether. For example, the extreme distaste in which the president is currently held, not only by Democrats who voted for John Kerry, who loathe the current president far more than average has been the case, but he has half of Republicans and conservatives just completely fed up. Something that I don't think Democrats fully appreciate is the concern among many Republicans of the sort of vision George Bush has of bringing freedom and democracy to the whole rest of the world. This comes at an enormous price, not only in terms of tax dollars and lives we've already lost, but what is almost not appreciated in the least is it's gutting the Pentagon.
Well, let me tell you, the one thing that puzzled me, George and Paul, and maybe you can react to this. There's no question that Saddam Hussein had to leave. The question is how and why that did we do it. But I'll tell you, after the election results started to come in and still being counted in Iraq, it appears that the guy we wanted, Alawi, is not going to win and as a matter of fact has been trounced. Now, does that tell you that, by and large, the majority Shiites there don't even care about what we're recommending, and they're throwing this guy out, probably? And then what do they do when that other group gets in and they say, okay, we want the troops out, we have now formed a democratic government, as you insisted, get out of our country now, please. What are we going to do?
It certainly gives a headache to the vision of the neocons of using Iraq as sort of a giant land-based aircraft carrier to dominate the Middle East. And I think it's going to trigger a rather ugly debate back here about just what were all these lives lost for? Why do we spend hundreds of billions of dollars for this outcome? What is going on here? And the worst example of mission creep I think we've ever seen, going from weapons of mass destruction to crusader rabbit bringing freedom to the whole globe.
Oh, now, though, is this Merlin or is that you talking? Hold on.
I don't know if either of you saw Meet the Press yesterday, but I saw an exchange, the likes of which I haven't seen in a long time, between Tim Russert and Donald Rumsfeld, in which Russert kept asking him, well, how can we have a democracy in Iraq if the government that looks like it's coming in is going to treat women as second-class citizens? And Rumsfeld tried to go back and explain that our own democracy started out with a bunch of white guys running things and women couldn't vote and so on. Well, I frankly don't think that's the image of democracy that George Bush and the gang were selling, the image of women being kept as second-class citizens and so on. We apparently have gone and created a fiasco in the Middle East.
I do not think that they expected this cleric Sistani and his group to garner 67% of the vote.
Well, then they weren't paying attention.
Because now, I mean, this is the greatest question of all. When they come into power, they were elected by the groups of people that we said go out and vote. We have freed you. This group is going to tell us to leave the country.
That's right. You're absolutely right. And one of the things that George and I have kicked around for a very long time in this situation is how in God's name it wasn't obvious to anybody, you know, who managed to graduate 10th grade that Saddam Hussein, who was essentially a civilian, a secular dictator who was mostly interested in stashing money in Swiss bank accounts, was a problem as far as terrorism was concerned when the people that we were dealing with are religious radicals. Saddam had no interest in aligning himself with religious radicals. They were as big a problem for him as they would be for us. It made no sense, and George and I used to kick this around, and how these people, you know, who were calling the shots could not be realizing this, you know, how they could expect, you know, that we're going to be greeted with open arms and you know, and rose petals. It was never in the cards.
Well, but regardless, my point is that once they take power, and they've got 67% of the vote, and that may be enough to do whatever they need to do in that country. And the very first thing they all say when they get together is, we would like our troops, the American troops, to leave Iraq. What do we say to them? I mean, we're the ones who told them, vote for democracy, you're going to run your own country. And so if they tell us to leave and we don't, then what happens?
No, I think George, we haven't kicked this around, but I think the Bush gang is going to say, fine, we'll leave. And
they'll have to, and they'll be forced to, perhaps at that point, admit a whole chain of mistakes.
Now, what has Merlin done in terms of this?
That goes back to where this started.
Right.
We were seeing a very unusual phenomenon where you looked at all the key players in the administration right now, except for Condoleezza Rice. They all look like they're going elsewhere. It's very peculiar to have an administration in its second term, only get about a year, year and a half into the second term, and then have things disintegrate. That's what pushes us into either one or two scenarios, either what we just talked about here or some health problems involving President Bush.
Hmm.
Right, because one of the odd things about this, and we even mentioned this when we did the show last August, is that, first of all, the election period didn't look like it ended at election time, and the big transition point looked like it came along halfway through the second term, not at the beginning of the second term or at the end of the first term. It looked like it extended about a year and a half, maybe 2 years, into what would be a second term, and then it looked like a series of transitions. And you may remember yourself, George Norrie, that you looked at John Kerry and John Edwards' runs and you said, But look, they come rocketing back, you know, in
yes.
like 06 and 07 and 08. What does that mean?
Exactly.
Well, what it might mean is that we all kind of look at each other and say, we elected the wrong guy.
Well, we'll find out, won't we? What's it say about the economy?
Well, I really think the economy is about to tank. What do you think, George?
There's just this quiet where we've gotten very comfortable telling ourselves it's all fine and good to have China manufacture everything we use and hold a huge fraction of our national debt while we go and design iPods. That does not keep America strong and competent in the current world, but it's the sort of equivalent to the dot-com hysteria around the year 2000. We're singing the siren song to ourselves as everything's okay. We can give away our complete industrial base and just buy everything from the Chinese. At some point, I think that string is going to run out.
Now, is this the opinions of both of you, or is this your predictions from reading Merlin's report?
Well, it's always a combination. We not only read Merlin, but we also read something that's done less and less, I think, these days. In general, and in comparing some of those notes, when you realize that Japan and China are holding about 12% of our debt at a minimum, and when you take a look at the what's going on with the euro in terms of its balance against the dollar, you begin to realize that if these countries that have been financing our debt all of a sudden decide they don't want to be doing that anymore, we're in serious trouble. And with the kind of expenditures that have been going on, you can't do tax cuts and finance a war and set up, you know, independent Social Security accounts and so on, and you can't all at the same time. It's really impossible. And as far as blue smoke and mirrors, this administration's got blue smoke and mirrors down cold. So we're moving into a year and a half where I think it's going to really get ugly.
We're keeping you for questions, Paul. George, I want to thank you for spending a couple hours with us. Appreciate
it. Always great to be with you, George.
All right, Dr. George Hart. We'll be back with Paul Gersio, your phone calls, a few more chats about the future when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.